Hello everyone, welcome to this week's edition of the Spanish Football Podcast with me, Phil Kitramelides, and Sid Lowe. It is a little bit later than usual. I was a bit busy this afternoon. I had to go to Madrid Zoo, so the recording was a little bit pushed back, and then it was further pushed back because at the time we agreed to record, Sydney had to go out and get some pizza and then eat the aforementioned pizza. So we're now recording much later than we usually do. Thanks for bearing with us. Hello, Sydney.
Hello, the pizza wasn't that great, I'll be honest.
Oh, well, the zoo was fun, so, you know, at least one of us.
How were the hippos?
They're huge.
Yeah, I love the hippos. They're my favourites by a very long way.
You get so close to them as well. It's, yeah. It was pretty special.
If you get too close at the point at which they start doing that thing where they crap and wag their tail at the same time and literally spray it everywhere, you. I've been at Madrid Zoo before and genuinely had to start running to get out of the way.
Wow. Okay, that must have been quite a sight.
It was amazing, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, mainly you running as well, but yeah. let's move away from hippos excreting and move on to what happened on match day 3 in La Liga. The Friday night game saw Mallorca beat Espanyol by a 2-0. Fantastic result for Mallorca, who have come up, got 2 wins and a draw from their first 3 matches and a joint top. Well, certainly they've got 7 points like 5 other teams at the top of the table. Espanyol, the only side in the division yet to score a goal. Valencia also played on Friday night. They continued their very strong start by beating Alaves 3-0. Then on Saturday we had Athletic Club winning 1-0 at Celta Vigo, a very nicely taken Iñaki William goals, giving the Basques all 3 points. La Real beat Levante by 2-0. Elche and Sevilla played out a 1-1 draw, Youssef En-Nesyri scoring for Sevilla, but it wasn't enough. They dropped points for the first time this season. And Real Madrid scored a goal by Dani Carvajal scored for Real Madrid as they beat Betis by 2-0 at the Estadio Benito Villamarín, the game that you are at this weekend. Then on Sunday, Barcelona beat Getafe by 2-1 at the Camp Nou. Wasn't an overly convincing performance from Barcelona, but they got the win. You're still on holiday, Sid, the theoretical holiday in quotation marks. You're in the province of Cadiz, and you didn't go to Cadiz 2, Osasuna 3, which is mind-blowing. You went to another game in the province of Cadiz, which probably wasn't quite as exciting.
No. Osasuna, no goals at all.
Osasuna were 2-1 down in the 91st minute and they ended up winning 3-2. It was very, very dramatic. There was also lots of goals and lots of excitement at Vallecas, where Rayo beat Granada by 4-0. It's 9 years since Rayo won a La Liga game by a 4-goal margin. Fantastic. There were only 580 people in the stadium to watch it. We'll maybe talk about that later on. And then the final game of the weekend was Atletico Madrid 2, Villarreal 2. A really, really good game. A dramatic end as well. Villarreal looked like they were on course for 3 very impressive points. Their first win of the season. And in the 95th minute, Issa Mandi heads the ball into the back of the net in bizarre fashion. It's a stunning own goal. And Atletico salvaged a point. We'll start at that game. We'll start at the wonder in a game that Atletico Madrid really should have won. Certainly, if you look at the statistics and if you watch the game and see all the chances they created, Villarreal had 2 shots in the whole game. They scored 2 goals. 2 very good goals, it has to be said. But this is a game Atleti should have won and they very, very nearly lost.
Yeah, and as you say, it's not just that they were rescued by a last-minute goal, a goal that was, I think, as you know, I love to do the numbers, I think I'm right in saying 14 seconds before the end, or was it 24 seconds from the end, but a ridiculous own goal. Not really the fault of Issa Mandi, who scored it, more the fault of Rulli, who'd gone out of his goal for reasons that I can't fully get my head around. I guess it's that thing of goalkeepers wanting to receive the ball from defenders, not straight on. But of course, the whole theory behind that is you don't receive from defenders straight on so that the ball doesn't risk going into the net. Mm-hmm. But if you've gone out to the position to receive it diagonally and the defender hasn't seen you move, then it's going to go straight down the middle, which is exactly what happened. It's difficult to know exactly where to start with this. And I suppose one of the ways to start is to start with what I thought was a lovely quote from Unai Emery when he finally turned up to do his post-match interview. And he says, "I've been in there for half an hour kicking the walls. booting bottles around and remembering all of our mothers. Now, for those not acquainted with Spanish swearing, when he says he remembers all of their mothers, I think what he means to say is he was going round very loudly saying how he was going to defecate on all of their mothers. So he wasn't best pleased. He then said, but look, now's the time for cold analysis. Now, part of the problem with that is that doing a cold analysis of this game is quite difficult in the sense that it was almost too easy, but that doesn't help you very much because Atletico Madrid were dominant. They had a corner, I think, in something like the 93rd or the 94th minute. It was their 16th. Villarreal had none. As you've already pointed out, Villarreal had only two shots. Atletico Madrid had 23 of them. That said, apart from one absolutely fabulous save from Rulli in the first half, a really brilliant save from a Thomas Lemar shot, low down to his left-hand side, I'm not sure how many of those shots you would say were really clear chances. But I thought the performance...
There was one for Carrasco that was cleared off the line.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, I'd forgotten that one. I'm not... But there's no doubt.
The header for Trippier was pretty clear. It was pretty good as well from the cross.
There's no doubt that this was a good performance from Atletico Madrid.
Yeah, and then much suddenly better than last week against Elche, I thought.
Miles better. And then suddenly they find themselves a goal down early in the second half. Really nice run from Jeremy Pino, who set up both goals. He drops it off for Manu Chigueros, and I suppose it is, strictly speaking, an assist, but there's still an awful lot to do. It's a brilliant shot. Really brilliant shot from Chigueros. They then get a second, which actually is really awful defending from Jimenez and Savic, who kind of bump into each other, going for the same ball. And here's a question for you. And I hate to say this, as most of our listeners know, that we are extraordinarily biased to all things Uruguayan.
Go on.
But here's a question for you. What's happened to Jimenez?
Yeah, I think it's a logical question. It's a fair one, I think.
He really isn't very good anymore, is he? When he was brilliant to start with. It's a combination of injuries, I suppose, and not getting continuity and so on. But he's not
definitely
great.
The third best in that back three.
Yeah.
And if Felipe gets his act together and gets fit, and who knows? Yeah. But Luis Suarez started for the first time this season and scored. Obviously, didn't do much else in the game, but he did score. That's what he's there to do. He came off and he had ice on his knee, and he looked a little bit been through the wars. Didn't look like someone who's going to play a huge amount of matches this season. I don't know. I don't think he's going to start that many. Maybe he will start lots of games, but then he won't finish too many, which is why they spent 25 million on Mateus Cunha, who came on for the last 10 minutes. But he did what he's there to do in that score.
Yeah, I mean, by the way, it's been confirmed that he won't be going with the Uruguayan national team in this international break, which, and we'll get on to this later on, has caused a massive fight between La Liga and Conmebol. But but I agree with you, and we said, didn't we, at the very start of the season that one of the doubts we have about whether or not Atletico Madrid can defend the title, despite the fact that on the face of it, this team is every bit as good as last year. In fact, it's stronger because they've added Rodrigo de Paul to the team. The doubt was, I just don't see Luis having the same season as he had last year. I just don't see it. A combination of injury, a combination of maybe not driven by the anger that was there last year, just being another year older and so on. I think you're right. I think he will start most games, but I think he won't last 90 minutes very often. I think they will try very hard to rest him around Champions League matches, albeit, his goalscoring record in Champions League is famously very, very poor indeed. Was it 5 years now without an away goal?
Yes, that's true. It is. It's a long time. A long time. Let's see if he breaks that anytime soon. Kieran Trippier back in the starting 11 as well. Another important player for Atletico Madrid. And you look at this team and you look at this squad and you think, this is the best squad in La Liga, isn't it?
I think it is. I mean, as I say, the doubt, I suppose, with Luis Suarez's position, and I don't know how good Cunha is. I genuinely don't. I mean, you know, you've seen much more of him than me. I don't know.
Well, I haven't seen much more.
Couple of games of him. I really don't know enough about him to be able to make that judgment call. But you look at how well they played last year, and I do think they were worthy league title winners. And I know that they needed a couple of get out of jail free cards towards the end of the season, but they were the best team in Spain last year. I don't think there's too much doubt about that. I think adding Rodrigo de Paul to the team gives them something a little bit extra, and he didn't start yesterday but came on and played very well again. And I think you're right. You do look at it and think this is the best squad. I would worry about that forward line a little bit, though. Also, the other thing, I suppose, if you, it depends if you want to look at this from an optimistic or a positive or a pessimistic point of view. In theory, if they can get João Félix back and playing well, they've got a really brilliant player on top of a league title winning team. Because apart from the first 7 or 8 weeks of last season, his contribution to them winning the league was relatively minor. And so if you get him back as well, you've got an extra really great player.
I don't know where he fits in.
Well, that's a question.
I do not know where he fits in this team.
Yeah, I agree with you.
But that's a problem for Simeone to try and solve. Villarreal still without a win this season. Three matches, 3 draws. They should have got something more. They could easily have won all three of those games. Mm. This was the closest they've come to winning, of course. They'd previously drawn 0-0 against Granada and Espanyol. And coming into this game, Unai Emery was being pretty positive. He was saying, look, I've seen a lot of good things. We're doing enough to win matches. I'm not too worried. Yes, we should have won, but we're playing well. I guess that's the same discourse still after seeing what his side nearly achieved at the Wanda. And yet, we should be expecting a bit more from the Europa League champions who have spent a heck of a lot of money.
Well, let's see, because obviously we're into the penultimate day of the transfer window. But so far, I believe, and I'm not going to absolutely stand by this because I might be wrong, but I believe Villarreal are the side that, in terms purely of expenditure, have spent more money than anyone else in Spain this summer.
Even more than Sevilla.
Yeah,
which is low. I think that's right. For Spain.
And we were talking the other day, weren't we, about the doubts up front. But of course, they've got Danjuma now, and they've got Dia as well. And we were saying, where's the extra striker coming from? And we were talking about the surprise departure of the name's completely gone out of my head. Who is it gone? And we were saying, why did they let him go? My mind's gone completely blank.
This is why we need producer Al on the line.
Yeah, we were literally talking about it the other day, and you said I was surprised that they let. And I can't. My head's gone completely blank. Anyway, whoever it was, they let go. Yes. they've now remedied that, and Danjuma scored, of course, that weekend. Took it very nicely. He was only 15 minutes into his La Liga career when he scored the goal.
Fernino,
and that's important.
Fernino,
of course, because we were talking about having him played well for Mallorca. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. A young player who's come through at Villarreal. By the way, the other one, Jeremy Pino, has come through at Villarreal. Looks such a good player, and if he gets a regular opportunities this year, I think he'll play very, very well. He's got a little edge to him, and I think they can expect more as well. And defensively, this is a team that last year drew 13 times all the way through the season. You never felt like they were going to get beaten easily by anyone, but they do just lack that little bit of something up front, despite having arguably the best Spanish striker around in Gerard Moreno.
They've been without Pau Torres, Dani Parejo and Samu Chukwueze for the opening 3 games of the season. So when they come back, maybe they'll look a little bit different. Let's move on and talk about Barca's 2-1 win against Getafe at the Camp Nou. It ended up being a pretty difficult game, pretty tough game for Barca. It wasn't necessarily an overly convincing performance. There were some positives for them to take from it, not least Memphis Depay scoring for the second consecutive game and second consecutive stunning goal, really good, confident finish from the Dutchman. Also, a couple of youngsters coming on and doing really well for Barcelona. Young Gavi and Nico Gonzalez coming on in the second half and showing some really nice touches as well. But there really did seem to be a lack of cohesion, a lack of fight in this Barca side. And Getafe played really well. They had more shots at the Camp Nou than Barca did.
Mm. It's the second time in 3 games that Barcelona have had fewer shots than their opponents. Hmm. And you look back and you think, look, we all know this. We're not naive. We're not stupid. We know that the post-Guardiola era is a different Barcelona. We know that the post-Luis Enrique era is a different Barcelona. We even know that the post-Valverde era is a different Barcelona. And we absolutely know that the post-Messi era is a different Barcelona. But even so, you think about Barcelona, and I think in these last 10 years or so, even when they weren't winning games, it was very rare that they weren't the team that had the most shots. It was very rare that they weren't the team that completely dominated possession. And if you kind of looked at it, the game, you would say, well, yeah, Barcelona were the better team, even when they didn't play well. It was very rare that they were actually overrun by teams. So that's why I think these 2 games are concerning. I think you're right. I think there is a lack of cohesion. I think, in theory, and we've talked about this, that if everybody's fit, then their starting 11, I think, is as good as anyone's in Spain. But I think there's a lack of depth beyond that. And perhaps we saw a little bit of that this weekend with Sergio Roberto having to fill in the midfield. Although I personally quite like Sergio Roberto.
It should be fine.
It should be fine. Exactly. Yeah. And as I say, I've defended Sergio Roberto before because I know he's limited, but I think he makes the right decisions. I think positionally he's good. I think his intelligence.
Estella thinks he's limited as well.
Yeah. Stella thinks everyone's limited who's not throwing a tennis ball for her. I think there are some concerns there. And then there's that kind of defensive weakness as well. The fact that they feel vulnerable to not very much. Also, I mean, after the game, Ronald Koeman, who'd already had a little bit of a word before the game, and he was asked about Mbappe, by the way, and he said, you know, if Real Madrid have the money, then sign him. Yeah, no, he's one of the best players in the world. I want Mbappe too. And then that was part of a broader thing where he said, look, this is a problem and this can't go on like this. And then post-game, he said, I want some more players. Now, in fairness, he put it in context and he said that I don't know if it's possible, and if it's possible, we can do it. But there is a bit of me that thinks, why is this even being discussed? You know, he knows the situation. Why is this even on the agenda?
They should be getting a little bit of money in. Elias Moriba looks like he's going out. They should get 15, 16 million maybe for him. They're going to get 1.8 million for Cucurella joining Brighton. They're going to try and get Pjanic off as well in the next 24 hours. So yeah,
and Emerson's going to Spurs, isn't he?
Emerson looks like he's going to Spurs, which is a funny one, to be honest.
Well, I mean, it's a funny one in so much as Barcelona executed their buyback clause for 9 million, presented him. And, this, by the way, tells you that they weren't executing it in order to sell him. Because they presented him, and they presented him as, yeah, this is matters, and this is part of our construction for the new season. And this just goes to confirm something that we've talked about before, which is that really and truly, with the exception, I would say, of Frenkie de Jong, Pedri and Ansu.
Yeah. Everyone's for
possibly,
sale.
Exactly. Possibly Ter Stegen. But I think even Ter Stegen, if the offer had been big enough, I think everyone is for sale in this squad.
Very much for sale is Antoine Griezmann. Very much not going anywhere is Antoine Griezmann.
Yeah.
But he didn't really do anything at the weekend. Again, he's had a slow start, I think, for this new season.
Yeah, and I think it's a problem anyway, because it's Antoine Griezmann. And because I think we forget really quite quickly how brilliant he was at Atletico Madrid. Obviously a different style of team and so on, but how brilliant he was. I think we forget how significant he was in a French team that won the World Cup and reached a European Championship final. You know, genuinely a central figure in that French team.
Yeah.
I think as well, we sometimes overlook some of the good things he's done at Barcelona in the last couple of years. But this is a guy that they bought a year later than they wanted to. And put bluntly, he pissed them about a bit. Right now, I mean, he's entitled to, that's fine, but he did. That cost too much money and that now has been put in a position. And by the way, previous managers have said to Antoine Griezmann, basically, what are you frightened of? Take control, go and play. Don't, you know, it's up to you now. No one else is going to protect you anymore. Go and do this. You know, you're a good player. And Messi has gone now, and I know it doesn't work like this necessarily, and it's not necessarily as clear cut as this, but this was the opportunity in theory. This was not least because it was his position given to him at last, and it hasn't happened yet. Admittedly, I'm reluctant to go too hard down this route because it is only three games and there is time.
Yes. Okay. By the way, if you'd like to ask us a question, if there's something that we don't cover on this podcast that you want us to talk about, send us a question on patreon.com/TSFP, and we will cover it on our Q&A pod, which comes out every Tuesday. Come and join us and be a patron. We've got more patrons than ever. Over 1,600 people have joined us. It's a beautiful community of like-minded Spanish football lovers. So come and join us, and it's good fun. Let's talk about Real Madrid, Sydney. You were at the game. You were at the magnificent Estadio Benito Villamarín, which was 40% full, but sounded very, very loud on the telly. It looked like it was as close to being back to a proper football match as you can get at the moment in Spain. And Madrid didn't, well, I was going to say they didn't rise to the occasion. They ended up winning, which was the most important thing, but it wasn't a scintillating performance. Although, I think Carlo Ancelotti was very, very happy at the end of this game. He said, it's the first time we haven't conceded this season. Coming off the back of that catastrophic defensive performance at Levante, managed to get the win. So actually, I think we all enjoyed the Levante game a lot, lot more. But he was much, much happier after this win at Betis.
He was, but with caveats. Yeah. In that he said after the game, He said it wasn't a great performance, but as you say, but he was happy the fact that defensively they'd been stronger. But he also said that he was unhappy that in the last 15 minutes they lost that defensive solidity and they could have been caught out again. And obviously there's a chance at the very, very last kick of the game, Martin Montoya, who, to be honest, in the stadium, I thought it was an awful miss. Having watched it back, I think it's a less clear chance than I first thought. But he's still got a very good sight of goal and time.
I mean, it's time. Martin Montoya on his left foot, so...
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And I think, look, one of the things that struck me is I thought Madrid started very well. And one of the things that was interesting in those first... I mean, it wasn't long. It was probably only 10 minutes or so, maybe 15. Was how quick they were to look for Vinicius. There was an awareness that he played well, I thought, in the first couple of games. And there was a couple of... very early on, there was a long crossfield ball. I think it was Casemiro straight to Vinicius. And they kept looking for him. And Vinicius was coming deep to win the ball back and turning and running at Betis. And Betis looked nervous. But that was about 15 minutes, 10, 15 minutes. And then for the rest of the half, Betis were the better side. I thought Madrid, to be fair to Madrid, I thought Madrid were very good for the opening 15, 20 minutes of the second half. And then it faded again. And they kind of took control. And I thought Casemiro played well. I thought there were even moments from Isco again in midfield, which is very interesting seeing him begin something like a rehabilitation. Now, obviously, you know, we're still not going to expect Isco to be Modric. But, you know, it may well be that Ancelotti can make him useful this season. And more importantly, that Isco himself can make himself useful. But then, you know, it was that defensive seriousness. And then when Madrid scored, it was from a Betis attack. And Juanmi makes a terrible decision at the end of it, gives the ball away. And I was sitting with Martin Einstein, who's a colleague here, a journalist here, works for ESPN. And when that attack broke down, we were sitting by in the front row. And Martin literally digged me in the ribs with his elbow and said, goal. And then you watch Madrid's counter-attack, and it was indeed. It did finish with a goal. And there was that kind of thing.
How many seconds was it, Sid? How many seconds?
I actually don't know. This is one of those rare moments when I didn't do the calculation. But it can't be more than 20. Yeah. Because it wasn't a foot straight. I mean, it was a counter-attack. But then the counter-attack kind of slowed on the edge of the area and then went back to Benzema, who put in a gorgeous ball, by the way, for Dani Carvajal, and they scored. But that kind of ability to break through when the space opens in front of him is still there for Real Madrid. But I think you're right. I think it was the defensive part of it that was important. I really liked Ancelotti's comments before the game, which I think tally with what he said last week. And he made this really nice comment where he said, I want us to be more pessimistic. And he said, we can't be optimistic all the time. And what he meant by that was, I want defenders frightened of conceding. I want defenders who are worried that they're going to concede rather than think, hey, I'll go up on the attack now. And it was really nicely done at the end of the game. I think it was Ricardo Sierra on Canal Plus, or what's now Movistar Plus in Spain, said to Dani Carvajal, so which one are you, an optimist or a pessimist? And he said, oh no, I'm very much a pessimist as a defender. You know, I'm the one that's thinking about the worst that can happen rather than the best that can happen. And I think personally that Dani Carvajal's significance for Real Madrid is too often overlooked. I think his return is really, really big for them.
Let's see how long he can stay fit for.
Well, that's the problem, isn't it? Exactly. And the last couple of years, he's been injured a lot.
Hey, Sid, do you think Real Madrid should try and sign Kylian Mbappe? Give it a go, at least, or, you know.
Well, I mean,
tic-tac, tic-tac,
you know.
Tic-tac,
tic-tac. Tic-tac, tic-tac. I don't know how this will end. I think it's in the hands of the Qatari royal family, basically. I think in a way, and we said this at the very start, that there was something slightly performative about the way that Madrid did this. And that was, I think, about expressing an idea, about sending a message, about a demonstration of intent to Mbappe, to their own fans and so on. All of which means, I think, it maybe isn't the end of the world if they don't succeed. Because I think, obviously, the consequence of them not succeeding now, in theory, is them succeeding in 12 months' time.
All right. Let's see. It's all going to be over in the space of a few hours anyway, so we will know.
Yeah, I don't know about you. I'm very much like this in the final days of the transfer window. There's a bit of me always thinks, I'll just forget it.
Yes.
Go to sleep for a few hours and then you'll know one way or the other.
Absolutely.
I always think there's a pointlessness about the final day, which I know is when all the excitement happens and everyone gets very kind of, you know, every little thing. But this is the point at which you can stop now. Nothing's going to change anymore. You know, it's between now and midnight. At midnight, you'll know.
Okay. We will know. We will know more or less this time tomorrow. So let's see what happens. We have to talk about Valencia and their fabulous start to the season under José Bordalás. We put a tweet out on Saturday morning just highlighting some of the statistical metrics by which Valencia are leading, which were quite eye-catching given their new manager. We got quite a lot of stick from Valencia fans saying, why are you saying this is unacceptable, you know, we're playing much better.
Well, there were stats, right? So we're not saying anything.
Yeah,
stats,
and then somebody did point out that, hold on, you should wait until the end of match day 3 when everybody's played the same number of games before these
good
stats
point.
So we've done that, yeah. And Valencia still have gotten the most fouls per game in La Liga after 3 match days, much like Getafe had the same most number of fouls last season as well. In terms of passing, the passing stats are quite eye-catching as well. They have the third lowest pass completion rate and the fourth lowest possession rate as well. So very much Bordalás tendencies for Valencia, but they actually played really well on Friday night against Alaves, and there is a dynamism, there's an intensity about them. And if you take a squad which has talented players in it, which Valencia's undoubtedly does, more raw talent there than there was in Getafe, and if you imbue it with some of that Bordalás aggression, steel, feistiness, you have got potentially a recipe for doing something half decent this season.
Let's go back to how you started, and you saying Valencia fans saying I don't like the stats. They're completely wrong. They are completely wrong, and I'll tell you why they're wrong. Not because they're wrong to pick up on it, or not because they're wrong to say, you know, but what about, or wait to the end of match day 3. They're wrong because you should be celebrating this, not complaining that someone's pointing it out. This is what you were looking for. This is what you wanted. If you go to Bordalás, it's because you're making you're making a virtue of this. This is what you're trying to achieve. And the fact, I think in a way, the best part about this is that Valencia have done this so quickly. The Valencia's players have embraced this so fast, and that Bordalás identity is so clearly apparent so early on. Now, look, caveat alert time, all right? One caveat definitely is the first game. Hugo Guillamón gets sent off after, what was it, 46 seconds. Obviously, it takes 3 minutes for VAR to look at it, so it's actually sent off after 3 minutes, but after a challenge on 46 seconds. So they go down to 10 men. And Michel, the Getafe coach, and Getafe that day had much more of the ball, much more chances, much more shots. He said after the game, where he was asked about Bordalás' identity and whether he could see it in Valencia already, he said, well, yes, but they were helped, and let's, you know, highlight, asterisk the word helped, because I don't think he means helped in the sense that, oh, this is good for them. But in terms of expressing that identity, they were helped by going down to 10 men, because that entrenches that idea of waiting deeper, of being defensive, of going long, of being aggressive. And I think that this isn't something for Valencia fans to recoil from, unless, of course, you don't like it on a personal level. But at club level, in terms of the club decision, this is what you're aiming at. And so if this is what's happening, that is a good thing. There's a phrase, and I'm worried that I'm going to get this wrong. I can't remember if I'm remembering it absolutely right, but there was a phrase that Valencia were traditionally a team that were, was it Copero y Aspero? In other words, a cup team and an aggressive one, a nasty one. And so there's this idea now that what Bordalás has done is recover some of that kind of traditional DNA of Valencia, which admittedly hasn't always been the case in recent years. It's not quite the same as Marcelino, although, you know, Marcelino was a counter-attacking manager and wanted a team that was physically very strong and very direct. Maybe there's some element of Rafa Benitez there, and it's well organised. It's a, shall I use the modern parlance, it's a low block. It's playing from deeper and trying to break from there. That's aggressive and tough and has players that have that edge to them. But, you know, this is what you wanted, in which case, don't worry about it. You know, embrace it, because this is the plan. And there was a moment at the weekend, and there's an absolutely aimless ball up the pitch. I think it's, I can't remember which goal it is now. I think it's one of the goals, anyway. I've got this moment in my mind. It's an aimless ball up the pitch, and Maxi basically turns, shoulder charges the defender out of the way, watches this ball drop from about 4 million foot in the air, and kills it dead.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant touch. And then just lays it off.
It's the third goal, isn't it?
And I think it's the third goal. Is it third? I couldn't remember the goal. Right, good. I'm glad it was a goal and not just a random moment. I think so. And I just thought, that is Maxi all over. And we said after week one, you can't help watching Maxi and thinking Bordalás has got his player here. Mm. Someone who, and again, forgive me for saying this, Valencia fans, but it's true, and I'm saying it as something that I think has to be embraced as a virtue. Someone who is strong, dirty, cheaty, and a very good player.
Uruguayan.
And I think obviously they've added Marcos Andre up front as well, so that gives them something extra. If I was a Valencia fan right now, I'd be really, really optimistic about this.
Carlos Soler scored the second goal of the game. An absolutely lovely goal. As well, his third of the season.
It's gorgeous.
Scored in all three of the games, and things are looking good for Valencia. Quick word about the crazy finale to Cadiz 2, Osasuna 3. As we said, the game that you really should have been at, Sid. In fact, on the bonus, podcast last weekend, I said, this has got your name written all over it, and instead you went to watch
Atletico San Luqueño against Nastic, and it finished 0-0.
Right, yeah, but you missed, as we said, a thrilling end to this game with Osasuna scoring twice in injury time. There were three penalties in this game for handball, and Osasuna definitely deserved to get something out of this game. They didn't deserve to lose. I'm not sure Cadiz deserved to lose either, but Osasuna getting their first win of the season, their first goals of the season as well. There were loads of teams who hadn't scored in the first two rounds of matches, but now it's only Espanyol who are left. One of the other teams that hadn't scored in the first two rounds of matches were Rayo Vallecano, and they scored three in the first half, absolutely thrashing Granada by 4-0. It could have been more. Playing the first three match days without a central striker, without a central forward. They've got Randy Enteca, who is an attacking midfielder they signed from Fuenlabrada in the summer, playing as the most furthest forward player, with Oscar Trejo supporting them. But they did absolutely brilliantly against Granada. Got a bit of luck. You need to get a little bit of luck. They had a deflected shot from Alvaro Garcia, which opened the scoring, and then a penalty, which really, really wasn't a penalty, and the VAR really should have overturned, but they didn't. And then from then on, they looked pretty comfortable. A word about Granada as well, and about Robert Moreno, who was really sort of pugnacious and bullish in the post-match interview, saying, well, this team suffered defeats like that last season, so, you know, it's nothing new for this team. Kind of shifting the blame and saying, we're already thinking about the next game. There was no sort of introspection there from Robert Moreno, who I think might be the favourite to get sacked already. He's a new manager, and this kind of defeat is never good.
No, I must admit, from the moment they employed him, I thought there was a risk that this would go wrong. I mean, it may well not, because he's got very good players, and clearly his approach in terms of the style possibly suits some of those players. But I think it's such a leap from Diego Martinez. And I think, what do you call it in English when Spaniards refer to it as un equipo de autor? This was very much the manager's team. This was Diego Martinez's team. It had his stamp all over it. It was about his force of personality. He is fantastically charismatic, as well as the technical and tactical work that he does.
Why did he leave?
I don't know the answer to that.
There seems to be only two real things. One, he thought he was going to get the Valencia job. B, he thought that he'd taken this side as far as he possibly could.
I think both of those things are true. I think both of those things are true. I think there was an awareness. There was an awareness last year that they'd overachieved, and I think those two things are true and necessarily came together. So there was an awareness that they'd overachieved, that now was the time to go to a bigger club, and that bigger club was going to be Valencia. And obviously things are looking good. Valencia have got Bordalás. For what it's worth, I think had they got Diego Martinez, they would have had a good season as well. And it just feels like a pity. And it feels like Robert Moreno is such a shift in a different direction. Mm. I think in terms of personality as well, in terms of his ability to
be likable.
Yeah, and to relate to his players. Yeah, to relate to his players. And I think you're right, that post-match interview at the weekend was, I don't know, I mean, it's maybe a bit unfair on us to look at it from a kind of an impressionistic point of view, and maybe he's completely brilliant and so on, but, you know, bear in mind that I followed him a bit with the Spanish national team. But it just came across as, I don't know, it didn't feel quite right, did it? It came across as sort of a touch of arrogance.
Quite striking.
I agree with you.
Yeah. All right. Listen, that's just about all we've got time for before we go. On the Segunda front, Ponferradina are top on 9 points. Three wins out of three so far. They beat Girona 2-1 on Saturday. Valladolid and Sporting are next on 7 points. Valladolid won 2-0 at Lugo and Sporting beat Mirandés 2-1. Jesse scored a penalty, his second goal of the season, as Las Palmas beat Huesca 2-1. And there were some surprise results. Ibiza winning 2-1 at Leganés. Yes, Estela, Ibiza. Yes, I know, right? Incredible. So there we go. We didn't mention Oviedo's 0-0 draw with Tenerife.
Oh, God.
To talk about.
Honestly, rubbish.
Listen, like I said, that's all we've got time for on this podcast. There's loads of stuff we haven't talked about. We haven't talked about Sevilla and them potentially keeping Jules Koundé and their potential title push. We haven't talked about Messi's debut for PSG and how that was viewed here in Spain. We haven't talked about aspects of Atletico Madrid, Real Madrid. Anything you want to ask us, send us a question. We've got the Q&A pod coming up tomorrow for patrons and we'll get through all of your questions. So join us. Patreon.com/TSFP. We're going to have that out tomorrow. Then we'll have a bonus pod later this week, looking at the end of the transfer window and the international break. Plus, a new series of TSFP presents starting for patrons next week, when Sid is finally back from his unacceptably long theoretical holiday. So come and join us at patreon.com/TSFP. Otherwise, we'll still be back here next Monday. Don't worry. We always are. See you then. Adios.
Cheerio.